Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for July 14th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, a 9-year-old boy in southwestern Wisconsin died last week in a grain bin, highlighting the need to find new ways to prevent such deaths. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on updated crop budget projections from the University of Illinois. And the folk from Earth Risk Technologies in Chicago will be by with the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon, and the July contracts went off the board today. July hard red winter wheat 652.5, up 18.25. Soft July wheat 549.75, up 35. July corn 390.25, down 9.5. September 381.5, up 3.25. December 388.25, up 3.5. March of 15, 399, up 3. May 407, up 2.75. July of 15 at 414.75, up 3. July soybeans settled at 1295, down 3/4. August 1197, up 1.25. September 1108, up 8.75. November 1086.25, up 11.25. July soybean meal 421.50, down 30. August 388.60, up 80. July soybean oil 36.75, up 4. August 36.88, up 11. August live cattle 148.15, down 97.5. August feeders 211, up 62.5. And July lean hogs 133.25, up 45. And those are Monday afternoon settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade. Looking at World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says, look for less rain in the northern and central portions of the U.S. Midwest this week. And he says that net drying is likely, while temperatures will be cooler than usual. Highs in the 70s are expected through Friday, with a few 60s in the north. Low temperatures at night will be in the 40s and 50s, with most of the 40s in the northern Midwest. Warming will return to the U.S. Midwest this coming weekend, with seasonable temperatures expected by early next week. Some northwestern and central U.S. Midwest locations will receive less than 0.3 inches of moisture this week, with many areas experiencing net drying. U.S. hard red winter wheat country will get rain this week, with areas from Colorado and southwestern Nebraska to Oklahoma and northern Texas being the wettest. While winter wheat harvesting is virtually complete in Oklahoma and Texas, that which is left may be negatively impacted by the wet weather bias. Waves of rain will impact the U.S. Delta and southeastern states over the next 10 days. Sufficient rain will fall to support summer crop development. Say, have you subscribed to our WILL Ag e-newsletter? You can do so today by going to this website, willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. The letter is free. Just click on the subscribe link in the right navigation window. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
A lot of green on the screen today, and usually, in the last several Mondays, it's been kind of a red affair.
Boy, what a pleasant surprise to the bull, at least, to see a little turnaround, not only green, but we did have some hook reversals in some commodities here. Key is to see if we can get some follow-through selling take place. This is one of the most oversold markets we've seen in quite some. Some date back to 2010s and to some other analytical studies point back to 2007. So it's been quite a few years ago since we've seen such oversold and down markets.
From a timing standpoint, were we in the window for a low or a consolidation phase?
Yeah, we were due and overdue for some type of sizable bounce, more than what we've seen here. We had a pretty good little bounce there going into June. And then, of course, the stocks report kicked in, and that really accelerated the downside, especially in the corn and wheat. They've been the victims of the short side on the spreads and just no buying interest whatsoever. So it would be important here to try to see some consolidation take hold and try to get some recovery here and alleviate the oversold status of the marketplace. But it's going to be hard to get a sizable bounce going. Even though the market's oversold, the fundamentals are questionable to a huge rally to the upside. Then plus two, when you look at the corn position, the commodity funds are still long in the corn market. And the fear would be if they use some strength here to start peeling out of the rest along and getting that short.
So if we were to see something along the lines of a dead cat bounce, what might it be worth?
Well, that's a good question. The technical charts kind of line up in here with reversal. We could get some follow through. It'd be nice to see D's corn get back to $4. That's kind of a step one, a short term in here. 390, 392 seems to be an obstacle to get above. 38% back up to the high we made there in June on D's futures is going to put us about 409. And that starts to put us right in that chart gap we left to the downside between 410 and 414.5. So that would be some numbers to keep an eye on. November bean-wise, kind of step one is to get a couple closes back above 1088 and a quarter. That 1088 quarter was the low we made last winter. Went through it fairly easy there last week, so if we can get back above that, that sets the stage to see a recovery. Step one would be $11 after 1088, and the start hitting the retracements, $11.33. This type of market where you need to have some orders sitting in there for sale, if you need to get some stuff sold above the marketplace, in case the market sees a big, huge up move that could be possibly short-lived and take advantage of it.
You mentioned the non-commercials in corn, and I think the CFTC report showed that they were about 123,000 long, and some of that is probably on spreading activity. If we were to go net short in corn, like it appears we're going to be doing in soybeans was only like 4,000 net long. What would it be worth on the board?
Well, that's a good question. You have these trend following programs here, and you start keeping the trend negative in here, they'll want to follow their program, and of course, be a seller here. When you look at the sell, we can kick in. If it would stay in place and the fundamentals would stay negative, there's some ideas that corn could slip on down to this low $3 level and beans into the $9 level longer term this fall if everything persists to be negative here as we go into this fall.
So do puts at this point make sense financially?
Well, they've always made sense. I know we've been a big promoter of price floors. Now the market's gone down. I know don't have enough sold. Just like when the market goes up, you have too much sold. So we still feel there's some downside risk here. Instead of selling out completely, there's still room to protect or gain to the downside in through here. There's a combination of ways you could do that. For those needing to make cash grain sales, you can move it and replace ownership on paper in case we do see August turn hot and dry or see a Labor Day freeze or something out of the ordinary to give reason that we've gone low enough.
With normal growing conditions here on out, is 14 billion bushels probably a guaranteed affair?
Well, nothing's guaranteed. There's some problem areas out there.
Mm-hmm.
You get out on east, Virginia, and even in the south, there's some fields we've seen where pollination is okay, but kernel fill didn't materialize, and there's only half an ear, and there's some 85 bushel yields when they were expected 150. But, that's isolated. Of course, Nebraska, well advertised. There's some fields out there zero due to hail. So we'll see what happens here. The average yield's 165.3. You add 2 or 3 bushels to it, that's fairly significant. The thing we've got going is 1.8 billion bushel carryouts, enough to work with. You'd have to take carryout down to 1.3 or 1.2 to give reason for the trade to be bullish.
Thank you very much, Kurt.
All right, take care, Dave.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. He joins us every Monday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. Authorities in southwestern Wisconsin say a 9-year-old boy died last week after becoming trapped in a grain bin on his family's farm. Agricultural engineers continue to work on new ways to prevent deaths in grain bins across the Midwest. Those involved in the training industry say reaching the younger generation will be an important step to prevent entrapments. Gina Dooley has more.
You guys see these out back there? We're actually north of I-80, so these are pop crates. If you go south of I-80, these are soda crates.
As simple as it sounds, these crates will be used like snowshoes above 175 bushels of corn. The grain bin for this rescue demonstration is about the width of a hot tub, but much deeper. 19-year-old Colin Ebers of Dakota, Illinois, volunteered to be today's victim. He's fit, and you can tell a little cocky that this corn won't best him. But within seconds, it's under his armpits, and he's stuck. 4 people surround him with metal panels to prevent more corn from covering him.
So now you just want to keep bailing, and you want to keep going down, so now you can jump on there.
When Ebers comes out of the bin, his legs are deeply dimpled.
I always thought of, well, why can't people swim out of corn or just try and find the way out? But it was really mind-blowing to think how much pressure or how wrong I was.
Demonstrations like this have increased across the U.S. in the wake of a record number of entrapments in 2010, including 2 young men who died less than an hour from here. Still, farmers keep going into the bins to break up grain.
I had a shovel in my hand cutting spoiled corn down, and then the corn began to flow and I lost my footing.
Roger Bates operates a 7th-generation farm near the Wisconsin-Illinois border. He wasn't wearing a harness, but his grandson Michael was standing watch. When he fell in, Michael hurried down the side of the bin to turn off power that stopped the corn from moving, but it was already up to his grandfather's neck. It took emergency crews nearly 5 hours to get Roger out.
I know many people ask me why I was in the bin and not Michael. But my theory, always been on the farm, if I'm going to do something dangerous, I'm going to be the first one to try to make it right.
Roger's attitude isn't out of step with many aging farmers. They're used to being independent. He says the younger generation is becoming more safety conscious. Rescue efforts get a lot of attention because they're so dynamic. But when the dust settles, prevention evangelists are born. Catherine Rylett keeps preaching the word. She founded the Grain Handling Safety Coalition. She's also the aunt of Alex Pockus, who died in a grain bin in Mount Carroll, Illinois. She says her group will pilot youth courses this year.
Obviously, we're training everybody, but I think it is going to be easier for the, you know, younger people to universally accept and universally adopt and make these best practices a part of their daily work practices.
Farmers and rescue workers may also benefit from universal construction standards. Bob Aharon is with the University of Illinois. As a farm safety expert, he's been working with the American Society of Agricultural and Biological Engineers to draft standards for manufacturing new bins, including similar anchor points to attach those lifelines.
The manufacturers have certain issues that they're trying to minimize cost as much as possible, but yet provide what they feel would be adequate safety features on a grain bin.
Committee members did not reach consensus on the proposals earlier this year, but Aharon says tweaks continue to be made. Another vote is possible next year. Even if new standards are approved, it will take years, if not decades, to phase out existing structures on farms across the U.S. I'm Jenna Dooley.
The ag economists at the University of Illinois have updated the crop budget projections for next year. Todd Gleason reports row crop farm incomes in the state are likely to remain low and declining.
The 2015 Illinois crop budgets are available in the management section of the FarmDoc website. Budgets are given for corn, soybeans, wheat, and double crop soybeans grown in northern, central, and southern Illinois. Central Illinois is further divided into categories for high and low productivity farmland, says University of Illinois Extension Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke.
And for corn in central Illinois, high productivity land, we're looking at a operator and land return of about $250 per acre. That's down considerably from 2013 when it was $380 and considerably below the average for 2010 through 2013.
Again, across the state, the 2015 returns are projected at the same levels as 2014 returns, which are considerably lower than the returns from the previous 4 years. These lower returns signal the need to reduce 2015 cash rents, says Schnitke.
That is where we're at currently, and for this $250 operator and land return, average cash rent for that land would now be about $290 an acre. So we're looking at a $40 loss to the farmer if they rented land for $290 and got a $250 operator and land return. So that's where we're at.
Well, the allotted corn price in the 2014 and 2015 Illinois crop budgets is $4.20 per bushel. Cash bids for harvest time delivery of 2014 crop at this time are below $4 a bushel, suggesting the 2014 price may actually be too high. Futures prices suggest prices near $4.20 a bushel for 2015. The 2015 soybean price is $10.50 a bushel. That's 25 cents a bushel lower than this year. The Illinois Ag Economist says the lower soybean price for 2015 is based on the assumption of the increased supply of soybeans leading to continued movement toward the historical soybean-to-corn price relationship. Still, the bottom line for a farmer facing a second year of dramatically lower income, or even a loss, is that cost-cutting must take place.
Yeah, the lower returns would suggest that farmers should reduce machinery purchases and other capital purchases, which they are doing. But in the end, this does require a reduction in cash rents. If we're looking at $250 return, cash rents have to be below that if we want the farmer to have a positive return.
Those wanting more detailed information about the University of Illinois crop budgets tailored to each region of the state will find them in the management section of the FarmDoc website. The address is www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Brian Stark of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Brian.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, I look at the gauge here, to my right says that we got over 6/10 on Friends Plaza in the last 24 hours, and you're just west of us. And I know it rained a whole lot out your way.
Yeah, we're probably pushing over 6 inches if you count the rain we received early Saturday morning. 5.5 of it was in a short window. So there's a lot of ponding, a lot of flooding in town. And obviously this afternoon we got a little bit more. I haven't looked at the gauge, but I would guess that probably another 0.5 to 3/4 inch came down here not too long ago. So we're plenty wet, but I would say overall conditions continue to look very good. Corn has been like a greenhouse up to this point, and now we're looking for some weather this week that's going to be cool, help with the pollination process. You couldn't order it any better, although I do recognize there are areas that have received way too much rain that is probably going to hurt some places, but at this stage of the game, I think most of the impact probably is towards the beans, simply because they don't like wet feet.
Right, they don't like the wet feet and the cool, too, so... And I guess, you know, we also can take into effect to some degree the light, because if it's raining, then the sun generally isn't out and they like the sunlight. But they have time. It's not August yet.
No, that's right. Corn crops made in July, the bean crops made in August. So while the rain may stun us a little bit on the beans, I still think we've got a good shot at a decent bean crop. Once we get to the month of August, we'll see how the weather goes then.
We're hearing some localized yellowing of stalks.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, the same thing with corn. I think you've seen some nitrogen leaching over the course mm-hmm. of the growing season just because of the heavy water. But, again, they're local issues, and unfortunately there's a reason they call them local. It just doesn't have as big an impact. Overall conditions continue to look very good across the belt.
So this isn't your first growing rodeo. If we were to see normal, and I put that in air quotes, growing conditions now onto harvest, do you think we're looking at 14 billion plus corn crop?
Well, I think we've got a good shot at it. I think easily Champaign County specifically could set a new record. Our record's 190, and I think we'll be better than that if we see normal conditions into fall. Statewide in Illinois, probably another record. I think you're going to see record-breaking yields east of the Mississippi. The question's going to be, you know, whether we get to 14 billion or not is going to be how well the Western Corn Belt does, specifically the Upper Northwest, where they've had a lot of areas that took out a bunch of rain. And to some people, acreage may not even be accurate given some of the flooding that they took on past June 1st. So there's a lot to be determined yet, but I think we've got a good shot at it.
Let's talk about some of the phone calls you've been taking from your clients. Is sticker shock a feature?
Well, I think it's just an adjustment. For what we've been telling the producer, we have to get away from price forecasting, and we have to look at the revenue piece. It all starts with a sound insurance policy from a risk management perspective, which if you look at any policy, it's yield and price. So even though prices might not be where the farmer wants them to be, you know, 200 bushel corn at $4 cash when we were there a few weeks ago is $800 mm-hmm. gross return. But if their yields are as good as 250, it's 900. Mm-hmm. So you see where I'm going with this,
right,
that it's not just price, it's revenue. And we have to encourage people the next couple of weeks as we get to pollination, get out there, scout, see what you got, do some yield checks, and once you get a good feel for that, start to put the pencil to the paper. And these prices might not be bad revenue-wise, given the fact yields may be above what they normally grow.
About 15 seconds, very quickly, some prices.
Cash corn tonight, $3.81. New crop corn, $3.63. Cash soybeans, $12.62. New crop beans, $10.66. And wheat tonight, cash wheat, $5.23.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Dave.
Brian Stark of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. It's Cow Appreciation Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1850, the refrigerated ice-making machine was first demonstrated by Dr. John Gorey, who eventually received a patent for the machine on May 6th of 1851. In 1857, Frederick Louis Maytag was born, an American industrialist. Maytag was one of the founders of a farm implement company in Newton, Iowa. They made threshing machines, band cutters, and self-feeder attachments. In 1907, the company began producing the Maytag washing machine to make up for the seasonal nature of the farm equipment business. The first machine, the Parsons Pastime, featured a hand-powered wood tub. In 1868, the first patent for a spring tape measure was issued to Alvin J. Fellows of New Haven, Connecticut. The tape measure was enclosed in a circular case with a spring click lock to hold the tape at any desired point. In 1943, George Washington Carver was honored with a national monument near his childhood home near Diamond Grove, Missouri. Carver was a prolific agricultural researcher, instructor, and chemical investigator. And in 1986, Raymond Lowry died, an American design engineer. He is known as the father of streamlining. Famous examples of his designs include the 1947 Studebaker Starlight Coupe and the Coca-Cola bottle. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is John Davis from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago. Good afternoon, John.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
From a very cool 70-degree temperature Friends Plaza reading here in Champaign-Urbana.
I thought, get ready for some more cool weather coming in the rest of this
week.
Well,
I'm just wondering, yes.
Yes, this is going to be a really cool week here coming up. One of the coolest mid-Julys that we've had in quite some time. And really the next 5 days or so are going to be, you know, we're going to see temperatures in the range of anywhere from 10 to about 15 degrees below normal. So a very, very cool period coming up, but a dry period coming up as well, so which is needed in a lot of areas.
So, in effect, you're telling me that you know, as the crop goes through pollination in the eastern corn belt, and we're talking about these kind of temperatures, it's not too bad.
Well, it's not too bad. I think it's ideal.
Yeah.
And, you know, from a standpoint of corn pollination, it's, you know, almost purely a function of temperatures, and the kind of temperatures we're going to have over the next week are basically ideal for all areas of the Midwest. So a very good period of pollination coming up for the corn.
What about second week of the forecast?
Well, we do see temperatures go back up to more normal type levels in week two of the forecast, but there's no heat per se. And so normal type temperatures are fine, but we will see, you know, temperatures rise up 10 or 15 degrees, which is significant, but it's so cool here this week across the Midwest that normal temperatures will feel quite a bit warmer in week two. But it's certainly not problematic from a standpoint of the corn crop across any portion of the Midwest. So for all practical purposes, from now through the end of July, it's a highly favorable period for corn pollination.
Knock on wood. Just a kind of a technical question. Why haven't we seen these domes like we've seen in the last few summers?
The domes of
the domes
heat,
of death,
mean?
Yeah, domes of death.
Well, remember, last summer we didn't see that. And so in 13, we saw a cool July and we saw a cool August. The last summer that we tended to have, you know, major heat, of course, was 12, which was a disastrous, you know, summer. But last year we did not have. We had a cool July and a cool August last summer, and that was also pretty good for pollination.
Any concerns at all on the horizon as you're looking out across the Corn Belt?
No.
Oh, well, thank you so much, John.
My pleasure, Dave.
John Davis, and he is with Earth Risk Technologies, and that is in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's closing market report. You can subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. Here's how you do it. You go to our website at WILL.org. WILLAG.ORG, WILLAG.ORG. In the right navigation window, there is a subscribe to link. Click on that, and you will be set to go as we every week bring you our take on the technicals and the fundamentals that move futures in the marketplace. WILLAG.ORG. This is Dave Dickey.